Parshas B'Shalach, Tav Shin Ayin Dalet, it says in Perek Yud Dalet, Pasuk Beis, Daber al Bnei Yisrael, speak to Bnei Yisrael, Yeshuvu v'yachnu l'fnei Piachiros. They should go back and camp by in front of Piachiros. In other words, they had already gone a little bit further into the desert. They should go backward and camp by in front of Piachiros, B'migdol v'neyam, between the tower and the sea, l'fnei Baal Tzifon, right in front of the idol known as Baal Tzifon, Nichos Tachnu alayam. They should camp opposite the sea, opposite the Yamsuf right over there. Now Rashi tells us, very first Rashi over here, it says, Piachiros, who Pisom? This is referring to Pisom. Pisom and Ramses were the two cities that the Jews built. This was Pisom that they had built up, and it's called Piachiros. Asham Nikra Piachiros, Alshim Shenasu Sham Bnei Chorim, because in that area, they became free. Now we're going to talk about that for a little bit, what it means that they became free there. But if you look, it says, Vehim Shnei Swayim Gidolim, Givohim, Zkufim. They were two tall rocks that stood one opposite the other, and the valley in between it was known as the mouth of the rocks. So therefore it was known as Piachiros. It was already known as the mouth. There was a valley there. And then Piachiros was really, the way they called it is because they got free, but that's what it looked like. Now Yonas Ben Uziel says that the bottoms of these stones were square. Okay, there is a massive achlokas about this idea of a square base. The Torah Shlema brings down, based on a Gemara Yerushalmi, Shviz Gimel Halacha Chas, says there is no such thing as a square from the Sheshes Mei Bereshis. There has never been anything created that was created square. And if you think about it, it's a true statement. An exact square does not exist in nature. Okay? Now, the Gemara does say that that's only by brios, which means by creatures that are created. There is no square part of any part of your body, or of any animal, of any part of their body. There is no actual part that is square. But it could be there are stones and plants that are made square. It's possible that that's there. But there is a proof from that Gemara, once again, that the world is not round. If the world is the perfect square, God never made anything to a square, which means the world must be round. We have other rias to that. There's other proofs. But that's the concept of what we have over here. But regardless, Yonas Ben Uziel says over here that these stones on the bottom of the rocks were squares, and they were in an area like a half circle, going in a half circle around, with rocks on top that looked like the images of people. One looked male, one looked female, with wide open eyes that were like engraved holes on top of them. That's where they're there. This is an area of Egypt called Tanis. Never been to Egypt, so I'm not so sure exactly where that is. They were not made by human hands, but rather by Shemayim. And it seems from the Mechilta, right, that the large set of stones is on one side, and there was a tower on the other side. So when the Jews were in this valley in between, with again, the big rocks on one side, the tower on the other side of Baal Tzifon, the Yam was in front of them, the Mitzrayim came up behind them, they literally had nowhere to go. So they had nowhere to go. There was nowhere where they could go to escape from the Egyptians. They were literally closed in on all four sides, and that's why they went so crazy over there. Now, Bamidbar Rabba in Chaf Chaf Gimel says that this is an area known for Znus, and thus the word Piachiros Cherus stands for freedom, which means freedom from anything that they wanted to do. Rules that they had that Judaism would hold out, they had freedom, complete and utter freedom, and they could do whatever they wanted in that area. Says the Maratav, that makes sense. All of Avodah Zarah at the time was based on Arias. If you know of anything about pagan religions, the pagan religions were quite into having as many people together at the same time. Doesn't matter if you were husband and wife or whatever it was, single or married, and you got together, and they were all together as one. And that was the concept of what this Avodah Zarah was like as well. There was freedom from rules, and you could do whatever you wanted in this area. The Manas Kuhuna says that it could be, that's why it was called Pisom as well, as in Pisasum. It closed people's mouths. When people wanted to talk about what happened there, it was sort of like what goes on in Vegas stays in Vegas. Nobody talked about it afterward, and that's that. It could also... What? It's not. Well, we hope it's... Yeah. Anyway, the P... It could also be that the word peh is a euphemism. Quite often the word peh is used in a type of way in which they use it as a reference to that area of the body, of them being together in znus. And it could be that's that. And it could even be that they changed the name that originally was known as Pisom, and they changed it to Piachiros so they wouldn't mention the bad name of Avodah Zarah and all the bad things that were there, because the Jews were so goder me'arayis that they had not been involved mouths of the riots when they were down in Mitzrayim. Now the Me'ashi Law says that Paro saw when the Jews got there, and that's the next pasuk. It says, "By Omar Paro Bnei Yisrael." Paro said about Bnei Yisrael, "Nevuchamim Arutz." They're confused. Sagar Aleim a Midbar. The Midbar is closed up against them. They have no idea where to go. He said they got confused when they came to a god like Paro's throne. See, Hashem makes us do things. Get a bris milah, go do korban pesach, put the blood on top of the walls, keep Shabbos. You have to have all these different rules that you have to do. And when they came to Pisom, to Piyach Kiros, and they saw Balt's phone, they realized, hey, there's a God here that lets us do whatever the heck we want. We could do anything. So said Paro, they're confused. They want it so badly. They thought that they wanted to be with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who is such a powerful God, but they see that this allows them to do whatever they want. And for that, you should really see Avodah Zarah, Samach Zayinu Medalla, the story that it has over there about Bar Shishah. The truth is, though, that it's really not like that. The truth is that we're not, those people aren't free at all. They're subjugated to their own desires, meaning they can't make the right decisions since they're all into their taivas and everything they have. And because of that, they think that what they're doing is the best thing at the moment. It's not true at all. And that's the idea. They're the ones that we would call enslaved to their own taivas, not being able to make decisions. And that's the reason why the Me'ashi Law says such a thing. That's the concept over here. Now, this area that's mentioned over here was used by Yosef HaTzadik to hide his treasures. Yosef HaTzadik had many, many treasures that he had gotten when he was king of Mitzrayim. One of the things that he had been able to get, one of the things that he had done, was split up the treasures in different areas. Area number one was right by Paro. You look all spiff. Let's just say no. He didn't have to dress up for this year. But area number one was right by Paro. That he went right into the area where Paro was, and he took that area, and he made that area his place of his treasures. He took another treasure, and he hid it somewhere else. Nobody knows where it was, but Korach found it. Korach found it, and that's how he became so rich. That's where he got it from. The third place, according to the Mechilta, was this third. The Shachal HaTorah says, the third place was over here by Baal Tzafon. That Yosef HaTzadik knew that the Jews were eventually going to leave. And he knew that in order for them to leave, Avraham Avinu was promised for them to have many riches. He left a ton of riches at the edge of Mitzrayim. And he gave it. He showed the Jews where they would be. So when the Jews got there, they found all these treasures coming up out of nowhere. A third of the treasures that Paro had gotten in Egypt. And they found it, and they were very, very happy. There are other opinions, by the way. Nebuchadnezzar found the treasures, or Antoninus found the treasures, or Yemos HaMashiach will get the treasures. Either way, but these were the treasures that were right over there. That's what we talk about when we talk about Piach Yeros and the area around them. Now, what about Baal Tzfon? What is this guy doing, Baal Tzfon? So Rashi says, Baal Tzfon hu nishar mikol Elohei Mitzrayim. He is the last remaining god, lowercase g, of all of Egypt. Kidei la'atosan. In order to fool them. Shiyomru kashri yaros. And they'll say, oh, our God is so special. The Allah pirish e of mashki l'goyim v'yavdein. On this, Eve says that God fools the nations of the world and he destroys them through them. How could Paro and the rest of the Egyptians decide to go after the Jews after all the malchus that happened to them? Well, they saw that Baal Tzfon was still alive. They assumed that Bnei Yisrael were worshipping Baal Tzfon, and they said, if they're involved with Baal Tzfon, we'll be able to defeat them. We'll be able to go up against them. We'll be able to do something. And that's what they said to themselves. They said, we're willing to go. Ibn Ezra says that Baal Tzfon was created using their knowledge of constellations and certain types of copper in which they drew pictures on them. And those pictures that they made and the certain things that they did according to those constellations made people get lost when they walked by. Now, I don't know what these things are, but there are areas like the Bermuda Triangle where there's such a concentration of some type of metal, metallic something or other, where all the instruments that people have in their navigation all of a sudden go haywire. They can't figure out where to go or how to get there. It could be the Baal Tzfon had the same type of thing, where anybody that went by and they had their little compass telling them whether to go north, south, west, east, which way was which, the Baal Tzfon confused their compasses and turned everything around. That made everything seem the wrong way, and that's what it was. That's what Ibn Ezra says, and went like that. Mizrahi says that this definitely is a form of Avodah Zarah, because Baal is like the Baalim Ba'ashtaros. The Baalim were known throughout the entire land and stuff like that. But then after that, we don't even need to prove such a thing. That's kind of obvious. There are three known Baals that we know of. Three ones that we get involved with. There's Baal Peor, and we all know Baal Peor, right? That's the one where, in order to worship the idol, you have to go to the bathroom on top of it. And the more you go to the bathroom on it, the better it is. There's amazing pshat behind that. Maybe we'll get that later, but that's by Parshas Balak or Pinchas. That's Baal Peor. There's Baal Tzephon, which we're going to talk about today. And then came Baal Zavuz. The only reason why somebody would know that is possibly from the Queen Bohemian Rhapsody song. It says, Be'ezelbub has a devil pulled aside for me. That's the Be'ezelbub is Baal Zavuz. It is the English version from Dante's Inferno, in which he translated Baal Zavuz, which is a creature, an hour in Tanakh. Which is there. Of course, people don't know Tanakh, but they of course know the Queen Bohemian Rhapsody song, so they would know that. That's where it would come from. But that's Baal Zebub. We don't know much about Baal Zebub. Lord of the Flies is Baal Zebub. So if you're wondering where the name of the book came from, Lord of the Flies comes from that itself. Now what's Baal Tzephon? Where did this come from? What was it? Yaakov Rubini says, on this idol was a picture of an evil dog, a Kelev Ra. He says, Kelev Ra is the Gematria 322, which stands for Merkava Tameah, a chariot of Tumah, which in the level of Tumah is supposed to be a very, very high level of Tumah. He quotes a bit about a tremendous fight that goes on in Shemayim. I don't know what's going on there, but the Yaakov Rubini goes into that thing right over there. Tiferes Yonason says it was a picture of the Mazel Shor. I assume this is Taurus, if anybody knows the different constellations, that the Taurus is the ox. So there was a constellation of the ox on it, which is the northern picture on the Kisei HaKavod. For those who know from the Kisei HaKavod, the throne of glory of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there are four pictures. There's Adam. There's supposed to be a picture of Adam Rishon. There's supposed to be a picture of an Aryeh, a lion. There's a Nesher, an eagle, and a Shor, which is known as an ox. At some point that was exchanged for a Kruv, and that was there. That was the northern picture, which also refers to Baal Tzephon. Tzephon is north. That's Adam. That's Adam. Yaakov and Adam looks alike. That's come on from Metzia and Apezai, Pei Dalit or Pei Hei. I can't remember offhand right now. But that's that. But that's the idea. The Ramban by the Ego Azov says the Jews wanted to make an Ego Azov. They wanted to make the calf because they remembered the shore from the Kisei HaKavod that they had seen by Kriyat Yamsuf. So Baal Tzephon was the Tumah version of that shore. It was taking the axe of Tumah, the axe that they had in Tumah, and they had put it on top and they put a picture on it that was known as the Baal Tzephon. The idol with the image from the northern part of the Kisei HaKavod, and they put it on in order to bring about a bunch of Tumah. Now we have to understand, why did this idol remain? There were other idols in Egypt, right? The Nile River was nailed. The sheep were destroyed by Korban Pasach. Paro himself was knocked down. The land was knocked down, even if they celebrated some part of the land. All the idols were destroyed during Makkos Bechoros. Baal Tzephon remained. Why did Baal Tzephon remain over any other idol that's there? Now, we already gave one answer from Rashi, to fool the Egyptians into thinking that there was something to go to. Now we're going to give some other answers. The Maskul of David says this was the idol the Jews worshipped. The Jews worshipped idols in Egypt. That's why they were on the lowest level of Tumah. They might not have done Arias. They might not have done other things. But they were into Avodah Zarah. When the Jews saw this idol, when they remained right there, they realized how badly they'd sinned. Because Avodah Zarah that's made by a Jew, Avodah Zarah worshipped by a Jew, cannot be batel forever. There is nothing anyone can do about it. Avodah Zarah that belongs to a non-Jew can cut off the arm. And immediately you can use the idol for whatever you want. It's batel. But by a Jew, when a Jewish person worships an idol, you can never do anything to it ever again. You have to destroy it completely, and it's gone forever, even if it's made out of tons and tons and tons of gold. You have to throw out all the gold. You cannot use even a little bit of that gold. So they saw Baal Tzephon, and they realized that it wasn't being destroyed. And they knew it was because of their own sins, because they had done it, and they needed it. And it was there, right there. So when they were outside the Yam Suf and they needed help, they could realize that they shouldn't call out. So it might have even been a test to test them. Were they going to call out to Baal Tzephon, or were they going to call out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And at the end, they were told to camp right next to it to really test them to see what was going to be. They passed the test. They davened to Hashem. They did not daven to Baal Tzephon. Kli Yakar says a little bit differently. Kli Yakar says the Egyptians had a bunch of different gods, and each god worked with a different mazel. It's unfortunate that we don't have all this information. But you should know that Josephus says that when Abraham originally went down to Egypt, Abraham went down to Egypt during the times of the world, during the hunger, he went down to figure out all the powers of Avodah Zarah, because they had the power of Avodah Zarah there, and there was something lacking in Abraham's knowledge of what was going on with Avodah Zarah. He didn't know what it meant, and he learned 400 prakim of a Gemara of Avodah Zarah there. We now have five. we've lost 395 prakim of Avodah Zarah. But he learned 395 extra prakim of Gemara Avodah Zarah in order to figure out what to do and how to do it and where to get it all and what to do with it. It's all that stuff. Says the Kli Yakar, they each had 12 idols, one for each mazel. Each had their own koach, their own power, their own hashpah, what they did in this world. This idol was known as the god of gold, the god of precious stones. As the pasuk in Yeshaya says, Mitzafon Zov Yeyaseh, from the north comes the gold, that's referring to Baal Tzafon. They thought that perhaps the idol remained because they needed to be paid back for the Jews. The Jews need to be punished for the gold and silver that they had stolen from Mitzrayim. Says the Kli Yakar, Paro knew that he deserved the punishment that he got. He realized that he had done wrong things when he had gone and gotten all the stuff that he had gotten, all the gold and all the silver and everything that he had done. He realized he had done something wrong. So therefore the Makos were deserving. But why did they deserve to lose all their money? Why did all the Jews take all their money? That they couldn't understand. When they were encamped by Baal Tzafon, they realized, must be that the god Baal Tzafon is giving us back our money. He's punishing the Jews for stealing our money. And Baal Tzafon is keeping them there, not allowing them to go any further until they released the money. They released it and happened from over there. The assumption is that Tzafon comes from the word north, and that's where it comes from, that the gold comes from the north, and that's what this god was. But there's another sefer. We have to go into a little bit over here. I'm not going to be able to explain it all. Tzafon also means hidden. Give me a second. That's what the Tzedek Lederach himself says. The Yaros Devash. Yaros Devash is the Droshos of Rabbi Yonis and Eichshitz. Rabbi Yonis and Eichshitz was a mad genius. I mean, he's the type of guy who, like, you ask him a question, he would be able to answer something very, like, right on the spot. For example, a priest was sitting on one side of the table. You gotta be quick on this one, okay? You gotta be quick. You gotta get this really quickly. Priest was sitting on one side of the table, and Rabbi Yonis and Eichshitz was sitting on the other side. So the priest said to Rabbi Yonis and Eichshitz, what's the difference between a Jew and a dog? Rabbi Yonis and Eichshitz said, this table. You get it? Takes a little bit for people to get it. Does. This table. So the priest said to him after that, some other time, he said, when are we going to sit together and eat chazer together? When are we going to have some pig together? So Yonis actually said to the priest, at your wedding. I promise, at your wedding, we'll get together and we'll have it together. That was the line. Line after line with Yonis actually. He was a brilliant person. His drushos are crazy. They are all over the place. Everything all over, literally all over the place. The Yaros Devash in his drush number 15 says that we all know that David HaMelech woke up every night from a harp that was there at midnight. And the harp had this wind blow, the northern wind blew in the middle of the night, blew onto the harp, and allowed the harp to wake him up. He says that Chatzos is a time to ask God for mercy. God should ask for mercy. But the problem is like this. Chatzos is not the same by the entire world. Chatzos in, let's say, Chicago is not the same as midnight in South Bend, Indiana. It's not the same as Detroit. It's not the same as Cleveland. It's not the same as Philadelphia. It's going to go further. Everywhere you go, it's going to be different. Listen, midnight is different here than it is on Devon. Just a mile away. It's different in every single... There's microseconds of difference between them. So what does Chatzos mean? So the Yaros Devash says, Moshe told the Mitzrayim, Kachatzos, around Chatzos, God is going to destroy the Mitzrayim. And why? Because there is no such thing as a definition of Chatzos. You can't define exactly what midnight is, because midnight is different according to your latitude and longitude of where you're standing at every second and every place in that area. But he says more than that. He says aside from that, Chatzos has nothing to do with the Chatzos of Mitzrayim. Chatzos Laila is the Chatzos, the midnight of Israel. That is Chatzos Laila. That's the middle of the night, and that's when the northern wind blows. When David HaMelech was in Yerushalayim, he was in the spot where his harp was standing right there, right at the spot where Chatzos Laila would hit, and exactly at that moment, that's where the northern wind hit. But it doesn't hit anywhere else. Why doesn't it hit anywhere else? Because the only place it hits is where Chatzos lies, where the real midnight is, which is opposite, so to speak, the Beis HaMikdash Lamala, the Beis HaMikdash that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has up above in Shemayim, and it's only there. Everywhere else is just a little bit off. So if Moshe would have told them, at Chatzos, you're all going to be killed as Makas B'chodos, it wouldn't be true. It wasn't at Chatzos of Egypt time. It was Chatzos of Israel time. And that was a little bit off from the Chatzos of Mitzrayim. And that depended.
How would they even know where that is?
I'm sorry?
How would they even know where that is? It was long before.
There's no question they still had abilities to tell time. And it's funny because Rav Yonatan Eichshitz and the Chassam Sofer both say, how could they not know when Chatzos was? Kabbalists did the exact opposite. They said, everybody has ways of telling time, and you can even do it at night, even without a sundial. There are ways of using quartzes to be able to figure these things out. So what they knew, and especially through a pendulum, if we know this nowadays, Rabbi Yonasan and the Chasam Sofer says, then certainly they knew it back then. So how would they not know? That's the funny part. But the truth is that it didn't go by then, but it was more than just that. What happens at exactly midnight? So midnight is the time, says Rabbi Yonasan, when they served their gods. It was known as Mitzapon Tipaseh Haraal. In the north is where the evil comes, and the evil means when the northern wind blows, that's when the tumah is all concentrated and everything's there. They believed in sheep. They believed that sheep were their gods. Why sheep? Because the sheep constellation is in the north, and it's the most prominent constellation in the north. It's known as the Bechor, the first of the Mazalos. You should know that, I forgot what it's called. What is it in English? The lamb.
Aries.
So Aries is by Nisan. The time of Nisan in the early spring, that's the time when they were all destroyed, where the Mazal was taken down to such a line. That's what it was supposed to be over here. At that moment, dogs bark. The Gemara says in Brachos that there are three signs in the middle of the night. Donkeys bray in the beginning of the night. Dogs bark in the middle of the night. And later on, that's when the children speak to the mothers. Dogs bark right in the middle of the night. That's the time of Chatzos. See, this is the pshat, says the Yaros Devash. The power of Baal Tzifon was supposed to be done right at that time when the northern wind blew and would use the power of the dogs, as it had the dogs on it, which was the middle of the night, to allow some type of tumah that happened at that moment. When the Egyptians heard that at midnight something was going to happen, they said, oh, it's going to be through Baal Tzifon. So at midnight of Mitzrayim, when they held it was that time, they waited for something to happen, but nothing happened. HaKadosh Baruch Hu purposely made it a Chatzos of Eretz Yisrael, so that it wouldn't be at their calculations of when Baal Tzifon was supposed to rule, so that they knew that it was something different and not there. That's the concept of what happened on that day.
So that's later in Eretz Yisrael than it is in Mitzrayim?
I don't know what it would be. Eretz Yisrael is more east, so it would have been, Egypt would have been earlier than the midnight of Eretz Yisrael, so it would have been a little bit earlier. I don't know how it deals, southern-wise, but we'd have to figure it out. It's closer to the equator. I just don't know how close to the equator it is. You'd have to figure out exactly, the timing of what it would be and stuff like that. Nonetheless, that's why Moshe Rabbeinu told them, Kichatzos, so that they would know it's not what you're thinking. It's not Baal Tzifon. Now, the Tzedek L'Derech says that it's more. Tzapnas is the word of Tzifon. Tzapnas Paneach. Sapnas Paneach, by Yosef's name, was revealing the hidden. Sapnas is the hidden. Paneach is revealing. That's what you said before, David. This idea of Baal Tzifon was, it was an idol that told them anything they wanted to know. It says, by you, God, L'melech Mitzrayim, it was told to the king of Egypt that the Jews were confused. By you, God, L'melech Mitzrayim, who told them that the Jews were running away, that they were confused? It was Baal Tzifon. It had such powers of magic, Baal Tzifon, that it was able to do things, whatever they wanted to know. Now, we're going to skip the Ben Ish Chai for right now. We'll come back to the Ben Ish Chai maybe a little bit later. But there are Rishonim, like the Sforno and the Das Kanim, that said, as we said before, the area was called Cheres, because anybody who wanted to run out stopped by Baal Tzifon and couldn't get any further. Every time they got to Baal Tzifon, dogs would bark. There'd be dogs barking when they tried to pass by Baal Tzifon, and they couldn't get any further. Rabbeinu Bechaya says, the first people to leave were the Jews. They were the first ones around. Now the Medrash Lachatzos seems to say the exact opposite, that if an Eved ran away from Mitzrayim and got to this area, he automatically went free. That's why it's called Piachiros. They were in Cherus. They were free when they got to this area. Hold on. But Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz says that it might be like this. If you could get past this point, you'd be free. But nobody ever got past that point. And he just asked about Bnei Ephraim. Bnei Ephraim were citizens of Egypt. So when they left 30 years earlier, they were not affected by Baal Tzifon, because they were born in Egypt and all of their children were born in Egypt. They were officially citizens of Egypt from their father Yosef, which made them a little bit different. A little bit different. So that's the reason why they were able to escape. There's a tremendous Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky on this, in this week's parsha. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky that goes through it. Well, no, but then they died immediately because they were killed by the police. So that was a bad part. There was bad stuff to it. How could it? So let's end this. Let's go with this. How could Hashem? What?
They died free.
Sort of. Yeah, in a way. Yignon led them. He was the false prophet who brought them out. Ephraim mourned them. Ephraim was still alive at the time when his great-great-great-grandkids ran away. It's good stuff. How could Hashem use this idol to show us where they were at the time? How could Hashem was saying to right by Baal's phone? Now there's an halacha, Sanhedrin, Samach, Gilmo, and Bez, and we talk in this in Shulchan Aruch. You cannot use a church as a signpost. In other words, you cannot say, hey, when you get to the church, make a left. You can't do that. You're not allowed to do that. You can't use a church as something, because anything that's used as a vodazara in Christianity is without a question at least shituf, which means a partnership between God and something else, which we hold la'alaka is a vodazara. So therefore you cannot use a church as an area of make a right at the church, make a left at the church. When you get to the church, you went too far. You can't use it like that. So how could a kodesh baruch? Because Baruch Hu said with Nei Baal Tzfon, I want you guys to go camp right by Baal Tzfon. How could he say such a thing? So I had four answers to the question. Torah Shlema said that it could be HaKadosh Baruch Hu is different. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the reason why we can't is because we might be fooled into thinking there's something behind that idol. You say something, you make a church something chashuv, make a left or a right at that church, it makes it chashuv. People think it's something real. But God is not going to be fooled by that. God is not going to look at it and say, oh, maybe there is something to that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to be fooled by that. So therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can use it as such a thing. There's similar ideas. Tosefta's Bracha adds to this idea, saying that the Beis HaMikdash is not allowed to be built at night. It's not allowed to be built on a Friday. It's not allowed to be built on Yom Tov. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu could do it on those times. And when we ask why, we'll answer. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not a normal person. So therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can do things that we don't have the ability to do. That's the concept over here. So Steph is Baruch. He is with Baruch Epstein, the author of the Sefer Torah Tamima. The stuff that everybody uses, the Torah Tamima, but he also wrote another Sefer called Tosef is Baruch. The Merkavta Mishnah says that the name was changed specifically for that reason to Piyachi Ros. And the reason why is because they didn't want to name it by the idol. He named it Piyachi Ros. And the Pasuk is telling us that it happened to be that Baal Tzfon is right there, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu told them, go to Piyach Yeroz. It changed the name in order for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to say where to go. The Midrash Chafetz says, since he was about to destroy this idol with the Egyptians, therefore it was mutter to say the name. The name of an idol which still exists, you can't use as a sign of where to go or where not to go. But if something is about to be destroyed, then you're allowed to say what it is, and that's fine. And the Maskil of David says exactly the point that Rashi wanted to say up above. He said it to fool the Egyptians. It's to show us how he fooled the Egyptians by them thinking that it was a chashuv idol. We know that it's not a chashuv idol, but he wanted to say it as if it was chashuv, make a left at Baal Tzfon so that the Egyptians would know what they were doing, would hear from their spies what was going on there. And there were spies there. Dothan and Aviram were going back and forth telling Paro what's going on. And they would say everything over there. We're going to end with one idea from Reb Wolfson. We still have an Avir Yaakov to talk about, but Reb Wolfson has a famous idea. He says, Yachatz on Seder night. You know what we do? We take the matzah, the middle matzah, we split it in almost a half. Is the big part and the small part. The small part we leave on the plate, and the big part we take and we put it later on and we use it for what? Afikomen. What's the afikomen called in our Seder?
Suffering.
Now, he says like this, it's revolting. He says, what it stands for is there's two times where we left Egypt. There was, and this is really from the Hasidic Sfarim, this is not Reb Wolfson, this is from the Sfarim before, and the Kedusha Rim says this, the Kutzker says this, it's a famous idea. The first time we left Egypt, God took us out of Egypt. But even though we had left Egypt, we still had Egypt within ourselves. So not only did we have to leave Egypt, we had to take the Egypt out of us. That's what we had to do. So the first time we left, we took ourselves out of Egypt. But then when we got to Kriyas Yam Tov, after Kriyas Yam Tov, then God took the Egypt out of us. He destroyed it. He took it away completely. So in other words, there was a first geula, a small geula, a little sliver of matzah. And then there was the full geula, where you saw everything happen and everything was done. And that's the bigger piece. Now the fact is, we know that that wasn't the full geula. We still have more after that. There's still something missing. The full geula is for later on. It's later on in the Seder, and we take that big matzah, that big piece, and we save it for later on in the Seder. We save it for the very, very end. It's tzapun. It's hidden from us. Taken away from our senses that we don't know when that eventual geula, the final geula will be. But it's there, and it's waiting for us. And who's going to bring it? Well, what do you do with the afikomen? Kids grab it. and the children, the tinokos shel Beis Rabban, are the ones that are going to bring back Mashiach. They're the ones who are going to bring Mashiach and allow Mashiach to come. It's even a country Yossi song for those who are very into country Yossi. But they're the ones who are going to come around. And that's the concept of Baal Tzafon. It's represented by us going by Baal Tzafon for them to know that this is the time, this is the final, this is your final Geula. That Israel are now going to have Mitzrayim taken out of them. That's what Baal Tzafon stands for, and it's referring to the Tzafon. And that's what we're hoping. We're hoping that it gets revealed eventually. What do you?
Is the fate of the Egel considered then a reintroduction of Egypt?
So to speak. Not of Egypt, but of Tumah. That allowed Tumah to come back to us, that didn't allow us to have our full capacity that we could have had. And that's how we're able to jump levels. We're able to jump up to the level of the 50th level of Kedusha to get the Torah and Har Sinai and the 50th day, etc. We're able to jump levels because we're already, we got the Egypt out of us. We're good now. But the Eagles have brought everything all back, unfortunately. Took everything and brought it all back.
When you talk about the north side of the throne and all that stuff, when you're talking about the heavenly levels, there is no north, south, east.
Yeah, we don't know what it means. We don't know what it means, but it represents there is a north, south, west, and east, and each one stands for something. So, for example, north is supposed to be the shore. The south is supposed to be Adar Mareisha. The west is supposed to be the Aryeh, and the east is supposed to be the Nesha. Why those, and why each one? There's a chop I need each one of them. I'm not privy to it just yet. Maybe when I get to one with Rabbi Raka. But for now, I don't know.
I'm saying, but how does that make sense?
It's something that listen, there's no real Kisei HaKavod. It's not a physical thing either. It's something that we have to know, but we don't know exactly what it means and how it represents that. We can't know. Unfortunately, Nesher is an eagle. But it's a crazy eagle. It's like a dragon. Okay, so that's what we went through today. Our basic idea, and you can keep these if you want. It goes like this. We said that there's Baal Tzafon. We answered three basic ideas over here, and this is what we're doing. Number one, what Baal Tzafon and Piachiros looked like. And what their powers were, the powers of Tumah they had over there. That was our first part over here. The second thing is why it remained over any other idol. And we had three different answers. It was the Jewish idol, or you could say because this one was the golden idol, the one that they used for gold, the god of gold, so to speak. And we said the last one, that it was the one that revealed secrets, the one that told Paro to chase after the Jews over there. And then they said that the area was also an area that they couldn't get past or anything like that. And the final thing that we did was that you can't use it normally as a signpost, yet nonetheless it was different by a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And those are the three things we have over here.